Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Dr. Killian O'Sullivan, he's a clinical psychologist and he also plays football for Meath GAA. Welcome to studio, Killian.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
You look fit and healthy. Exactly what we expect from semi-pro GAA stars these days.
Yeah. I have to try and stay in some level of fitness all the time. So, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, because you play your county football for Meath. Where do you play your club football?
I play my club football with Moynalvi. It's a little parish between Trimmond and Shockland back in Meath. Quite a rural club.
Very rural, yeah.
Not really. You'd be gone through it by the time you know you've been there. So, yeah.
And it's very south Meath. So you're not affected by the big northeast accent.
No,
the lovely Meath.
No, I haven't got that twang from north Meath.
That's a terrible shame. So are you a Coltshie then, not a townie?
I would be a Coltshie, but I went to school in Dublin, so I was always called a Coltshie when I was in Dublin, and then when I went home, I was called a townie. So yeah, best of both worlds, I suppose.
And who was at home growing up?
Mum, dad, two brothers, a sister, and loads of dogs and animals. Parents are vets.
And
grew up beside a farm. So, always busy, always on the go, but loved it.
And mad into sport from the football in your hands.
Yeah, from about 4 years of age.
Four?
My dad used to train adult teams and I was often, he'd forget the cones a lot. So my brother would be used as the cones when he was training the adult teams.
Oh,
so
yeah.
5, 6 years of age, we'd be told to stand in the 21 there, Killian. And the players would be told, run out around Killian and kick the ball back. So, I've been in it from very young.
Training teams and a vet, obviously it's a household that does not lie in on a weekend.
No. Any sense of if you're staying still, it's not a good thing. So that's something that we've always had kind of on the move. But I think it's important to kind of learn how to rest. So I'm learning how to do that now. And that's a good thing. So.
And when did you meet your wife, Caoimhe?
I met her eight or 9 years ago. She might be happy to hear this now. But yeah, I met her in college. We were in college for 3 years and I drummed up the courage to ask her out in the last year.
How long is that course?
It's 3 years.
We were
in lectures for 3 years and I was like, I think she might like me towards the third year. And I was like, okay, I'll ask her out. And she was like, thank God, about time.
And so you're married now?
We're married now. Yeah, married a... Nearly a year. May 17th. I have the date anyway, so it's all been one big blur, I suppose.
Oh, but
May 17th,
it's
a year to the date since we got engaged. Well,
people will understand in a moment, because the honeymoon then was it December last year?
December last year, yeah. It was November. It was in November. We went travel to South America. And
brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Was that yours or...?
Both of us.
Oh, yeah. Very diplomatic.
But we're very 50-50 in the relationship. So, traveled to South America, into Machu Picchu, in Peru, in Chile, with the big main goal of getting down to Patagonia. But we never got there because I kind of messed up the honeymoon, the holiday.
You can't blame yourself. But you started feeling out of sorts.
Yeah. So it actually happened before. I was going, I had this tingling in my hand, but I kind of didn't pay any attention to it. I just thought it'd go away, be a pinched nerve.
Yeah.
And then, through the travel, as we were traveling for 3 or 4 weeks, it got progressively worse. This tingling sensation in my fingers, it gradually went up my arm, into my hand, and then into all the left side of my body. I'd been staying in touch with the Meath medical team back home the whole time and just thought it was a pinched nerve. Mm-hmm. But we got to Argentina, and in Argentina, I kind of knew something was up. I had to get it looked at. I remember we were in a restaurant and I had to ask Caoimhe to cut my steak. I couldn't use the knife or fork anymore. I couldn't really use the left hand to do anything, to count out money or to tie my shoelaces. So I lost kind of a lot of motor control in it. And
all affecting only the left side of your
Only mind. My left side, so only my left arm, but I had a lot of numbness and sensation, a lot of numbness in my left side of my body from my hips up. So it was a bit disconcerting. And it was at this stage, the medical team back home said, look, you better get a scan. So
So that's what you're doing on honeymoon.
I know the medical system in Argentina. If anyone wants any recommendations, I can tell them where to go and who to see.
Sounds pretty good, by the way, given your experience. But we would expect Argentina, given their economic disasters, that would be.
No, it's the private healthcare system. I suppose if you have money, you can. Yeah. And I'm very fortunate that we had, I suppose, more money than. Than most of them you're traveling there, you know, not much, but more than the general population there. But our hotel owner, Victoria is her name, a big shout out to her. She went to all the appointments with us. She translated for us.
She just saw the difficulties
that I was having and says, yeah, you need to get that looked at. And she came to the hospital appointments with us, translated, exactly what my symptoms were, what scans I needed. You know, she had a couple of contacts in the hospitals that she was able to get me seen quicker than normal. So she made a very scary situation a lot less scary, I suppose. And yeah, put us up in the hotel, didn't want us to take any money or payment for this. Always be indebted to her, still in contact with her as well. So the plan is to get back there one day and finish off the honeymoon with no... Long life illnesses coming from it the next time we do it. But she was a big part in helping us negotiate that medical system in Argentina.
Kindness goes a long way when you're in the...
Yeah, really angel in human form, we felt at the time. It was just like, yeah.
What was your state of mind, the pair of you? This is your honeymoon. It's supposed to be the happiest time of your lives.
Yeah, for sure. And we had a great time, just to say that, you know, we had a great 2-3 weeks and I was putting the hand to the back of my mind. I just thought it was a pinched nerve. I kept telling myself that. And it was more, you know, with GAA, you can kind of dictate the schedule a lot with Quiva. And so I was like, oh, here we go again. Killian having to, rule in the roost or having to dictate how things are done. And I thought we'd just be going home for a surgery to release a trapped nerve. But we got the scans and I sent the scans home to the medical team. And I remember I got a call on Tuesday morning at like 4 a.m. And I knew that the physio's not calling me for a bit of a chit-chat. To have the crack or to tell me everything's okay. He just said there's some indications in the scan that are a bit more serious and you need to come home. There's kind of white spots or what might be lesion activity, they thought at the time.
On your spine?
On my spinal cord, spinal cord. So on my spinal cord. So there was this big, I could see it, this big white dot.
Terrifying.
Everything else was, very scary. But your kind of brain, and very scary. A lot of fear, a lot of worry, a lot of tears right at the beginning, but your kind of mind takes over, and having Quiva there was so important as well. Your mind takes over and just like, okay, get home. And so it was helpful enough in terms of we just were like, get flights. And we flew that day, so we flew Tuesday night. So your mind is focused on the practicals, and that's the kind of helpful thing maybe even at that time was just getting home, getting to the hospital, and we're very... grateful to have the medical team, John Holian in St. Vincent's and Paul Keneally, who really helped us out through all of that. I flew on the Tuesday night, landed in Ireland on the Wednesday night, and I was in St. Vincent's down the road on Thursday morning for, I suppose, every scan and every kind of blood test, just to kind of see what it was. And then they confirmed after the hospital stay that it was, MS. But I had to be in there to get steroid treatment just to calm down the attack.
So you got a quick diagnosis, I suppose, not early.
Yeah, a quick diagnosis.
Did you have an inkling at that stage? This is what was.
I did. Yes, when I asked Paul, I asked Paul when he called me in the morning on the phone. I said, "What would be what would be the cause of the spots?" And you're kind of saying, you know, we don't know for sure, but MS is one of the likely reasons. And I kind of knew a bit about what MS was, so that was a shock for sure.
Tell people who may not be familiar.
So MS is an autoimmune disease. It is. Essentially where your immune system goes rogue, it thinks that there is something wrong it's typically used to fight off bacteria or viruses, and essentially it's to start attacking itself when there's actually nothing wrong. There's no bacteria or virus in my body. Yeah. So it starts attacking itself, and what it specifically attacks is the myelin sheath around the nerves, around my spinal cord, which protects the nerve, and starts to break that down. And so what I was getting was there's lesions in my spine, and also in the scans later showed in my brain that my immune system thinks there's something wrong there and it's trying to get rid of it, but it's actually attacking my the myelin sheath, my spinal, protecting my spinal cord, and begins to break it down, and then that affects the nerves. So it was kind of it was highlighted to me as being like an electric cable, you know, the any electric cable that you have at home, the protective covering around it is that kind of that myelin sheath, and the cable inside it is my spinal cord. And what was happening was that cable, the protective cable, was being broken down by the MS, and that exposes the nerve, exposes the electric cable, and therefore the message can't travel as well. That was explaining why I was losing the motor function in my left side. You know, my brain was telling me to do it, but it wasn't really doing what it wanted to do because the message wasn't getting through as well. So that was the MS attack, where I was like, something's up here, it's gone rogue, and it was a kind of breaking that down, breaking that myelin sheath down.
So how are you feeling then when you get this news? What are you thinking about? Because you're really starting out on your adult life here, aren't you? You've just got married.
Yeah, there's shock at the start, really, a very natural shock at the start. And you're just kind of looking to, again, initially at the beginning, it's just the practicalities, get home, what exactly is it? And then it's kind of, you get discharged from hospital and it's just like, well, you know, it's kind of it, you're left to your own devices slightly. You know, and I had family and friends around me, you know, that very much wanted to link in, but it's when you Google MS, and that was one thing I was told not to do, you kind of get the worst case scenarios. So it's very much
You didn't do it.
No, but my wife is a researcher, actually. So she was very helpful, and she's a filter for me. So she kind of worms out the bad stuff.
Yes.
And
so she's able to give you valuable research.
Yes, exactly. Yes. You know, rather than reading like the worst case scenarios or she was able to present me the evidence-based information around the condition. But yeah, once you're kind of, I was told it's early relapsing remitting, so it's, I suppose, the good MS if you can get it. And
what's the good MS versus the bad?
I suppose it's early relapsing remitting, and you can have a progressive MS where your symptoms will gradually decline. So okay. I was in the middle of an attack, and I had to come home, get on the steroids just to calm the attack down.
And that's what it will continue to do?
Yes,
thing,
yeah. So yes. I'm on...
Where it thinks you have an illness needs to be fought off, and instead it's kind of affecting your nerves.
Yeah,
and
so I'll have it forever, but progressive MS, it slowly gets worse. But with the MS that I have, I have this attack, I've calmed it down, I've stopped it, and hopefully this is where the disease will stay where it is for now.
So there's good treatment now compared to even 10, 15 years ago?
10 years ago, yeah. It would have been far scarier 10 years ago even. There's unbelievable research going into it at the moment. And it was actually funny, I was only thinking at the time, my friend said to me, oh yeah, I raised money for that when I was a kid. And I was like, did you? Well, we all did the MS readathon.
That's a perfect you know,
and
that.
I
didn't
realise, oh my God, actually
You probably did it yourself.
Yeah, but MS I think when I collected the money for it, I'm not sure I gave it in at the time, you know, when we were reading the books and stuff. It was just kind of left for a pocket change at home, but
the intention was there.
Yes, yeah. I'm on this what's called DMTs, or disease modifying therapies, and what that does is just slow the disease progression down. I go in every 6 months to St. Vincent's and get an infusion of kind of an immunosuppressant, so it takes out some of my immune system to stop it attacking itself, essentially. So I much call maybe immunocompromised, so I have to just be careful in terms of just not to be around really sick and kind of like, I suppose, snotty babies all the time.
So if you actually get an illness, then...
Yeah, I'm more prone to illnesses. I'm more susceptible, you know, in terms of, so I have to kind of stay up to date with my kind of flu vaccines and COVID vaccines. And just keep an eye on myself, keeping fit, healthy. And that was the best thing about this whole thing was, not the best thing about the whole thing, but... I had all the protective factors anyway, you know, I was fit, I was healthy, I didn't smoke, I had all those kind of lifestyle protective factors which were really helpful for me. That kind of gave me a good outlook, you know, when the worry and the fear does come in terms of what's going to happen in 5, 10, 15 years, I was able to kind of say, look, I'm actually doing everything that I can. There's nothing that I'm not doing, you know.
It sounds like your psychology degree came in handy as well.
I had to use all my psychology and a bit more,
On yourself, like you never expected to do.
No, and I wouldn't try to therapize myself. So I pay someone to do that for me. Thank God. So
that was a good idea. So you went to counseling.
Yeah, yeah. I've been in therapy before, so like I just found it very helpful to go back as a way of processing it all, and just a way of working through stuff as well. But yeah, just to help manage what's that worry going to be like in the future, because, you know, there's no point in hiding from these emotions or when they come along, because they're going to pop up somewhere else anyway. So I have to kind of meet them, welcome them in, talk to them. It's natural to worry when you have a condition like this, but kind of what's the worry trying to tell you? And yeah, looking, I suppose, from a positive outlook from there and using that to, yeah, kind of create that bit of a better life for yourself.
When you get an attack, as you described, and you have to do the therapies, you have to lay low, do you, for a day or two?
Yeah, when I get the medication, it's just I go in, I get an infusion for the day. I'm kind of just, you have to sit in the hospital and let the infusion go in. They have to wait to see that there's no adverse reactions to it. And then you're a bit tired for a day or two afterwards. And then you're kind of left to your own devices really much after that. You know, best case scenario me going forward is that I get my infusion every 6 months. I go to my neurologist every year just to check in, and I'll never, I suppose, have to deal with maybe an MS attack again.
Okay. It's incurable, but it continues.
Sorry?
It's incurable.
Yes, there is no cure for it.
Okay, but the treatment,
is excellent. And, you know, the team that's in St. Vincent's, my neurologist and the MS clinic team, nurse as well, are excellent as well. So it's very safe in that way for me. I'm not looking for a cure either. That was very much they were saying that.
So this was November, December last year.
Yes.
When did you get back to training?
Well, I went back to training actually in January. Now, I still couldn't use my left hand at this stage. It was still kind of a bit of a baby hand, I would refer to it. You know, I couldn't do much with it, but I'm so grateful to the management team for allowing me to ask the question, you know, because it's a high performance environment. Mm-hmm. So they easily could have said, look, we kind of just need to go with the team that's able to play. I know I wasn't able to play at the time, but they gave me that space to ask that question, and also the access to the expertise that were in there from a nutrition point of view, strength and conditioning, psychology. So it was really great to have that space. I suppose when the ground is shaky underneath your feet, having a bit of the structure and the routine that the training gave you was, I've referred to it, it made the whole experience a lot scarier, you know, and it was a way of processing it as well. Football was always very important to me, but it took on this kind of new life in terms of something, you know, winning matches and competitions was important, but it was almost this new thing as well, that if I could kind of get back playing football, if I get back playing at that level, then the MS won't interfere with too much in my life.
But you get back playing.
I do. I get back slowly but surely.
Do you go play with the club first?
I played one or two matches with the club, but I'd been kind of playing away in training, and things had been going well in training. Mm. And then we had a training camp, and the training camp went very well, you know. So I was able to kind of manage that load and
but
that training
load.
Putting
on the Meath jersey is really there.
Yes, yeah.
I can live my life normally. Must be that moment, was it? Do you remember the moment?
Well, it was actually, when I was asked in the car park in Dungannon, would you be available to play this weekend? Would you be happy to be picked for the panel? This one, the Dublin, we played Dublin in the Leinster Championship. Now, we didn't get on that day, but my God, I was never more happy to be in the stadium, sitting in the stand. You know, like, you know, I was like a child. You know how giddy I was and how great it was. Now we lost and it didn't go to plan, but I was never, I suppose, more proud of myself actually in that moment.
Yeah.
And then later on in the All Ireland series, I got back and got a position in the starting team. And the results didn't go our way, and that would be in the fairy tale, you know, in terms of you get back and you win and you go on a big run. But, you know, I suppose life isn't really a fairy tale, and the MS kind of highlights that to me as well. Mm-hmm. So there's a reality to everything. But like I said, never more proud of myself for getting back to that stage and getting the chance to, I suppose, show and pour that love into playing the game for all the love that had been shown to me throughout the year.
And a brave man going out into a pitch with a man bun as well.
Yeah. I get a lot of stick for that. But
what do psychologists say about that hairstyle?
I don't really know. A lot of people seem to be more focused on it than me.
I remember very well. There you go.
Yeah, I remember very well. Andy McIntyre tried to bring he was a previous manager, tried to bring in a razor blade into the dressing room afterwards to try and cut my hair. but I was having none of it. So it's been featuring around long enough, and yeah, I think it'll be here
everyone
to stay.
Else has to get over it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think my wife would recognise me actually without it at this stage, you know. So yeah, it'll have to stay until my hair starts falling out.
You've the mustache as well, so that's
yeah. I
started
growing
that.
Yeah,
yeah. On the GA pitch these days for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the man, but there's a few in Mayo, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, one or two. I think I'm setting a bit of a trend now, you know.
It sounds like you're studying everyone else's reaction to it.
Well, enough latest. People tell you about it on the pitch as well, so you kind of have to grow a bit of thick skin around it.
Do another PhD.
Yeah, exactly, you know. Could be one to get a bit of funding for, all right.
You must have got a nice reaction from the interview you gave. Lovely interview with Malachy Clark in the Irish Times.
Yeah, I know Malachy a bit. He would have texted me actually just after he heard I was a bit ill, and he texted me, you know, really lovely text, and then just kind of actually just reached out a bit later on then as well when he found out. He was just, I think he described it, he was reporting on a couple of matches and then just saw my name pop him. So I said, oh, like, is that Killian? Is that Killian back? And yeah, just reached out. And as I said to him, it must have been a bit of a slow day that he got in touch with me because there wasn't much sport maybe going on in the GA.
But a great story. Yeah,
yeah, it was and I knew there was going to be a reaction to it, but genuinely surprised at the level of the reaction to it. Maybe that's just me underappreciating. But I suppose I'm very lucky in just in terms of the, having the chance to tell that story, because I suppose... definitely one of the hardest things that I've ever done, you know, individually. But just to qualify that with saying, I suppose the area that I work in as well, I see lots of bravery and courage every day that that don't get told. So
clinical psychology,
I can kind of put things in perspective.
There's a message like here. It's from Fiona, and she says, "Excuse the pun. Killian's story is really touching a nerve. I had a spinal cord tumour which started with tingling in my hands like you described. I ended up having full removal by surgery about 8 months after symptoms started to appear, which was followed by cancer treatment, but continued to live with long-term neuropathy, loss of motor skills and sensory sensation, similar to MS symptoms for some people. Well done to Killian for sharing his story. All neurological illnesses are somewhat mysterious in how they impact people, but all we can do is get on living day to day." And she says, "Well done for getting back to sport." I think you're proud of yourself for that. "My message to others is not to ignore what your body is telling you. By the way, I got married 3 months post my surgery and still waiting for the honeymoon." So it's lovely. So you've kind of had that impact, which is in your field as well, isn't it?
Both in my field and outside of the field as well, because I've been at my phone is blowing up for the last week, just with lovely stories, people getting in touch, and it's exactly that. If you can give a little bit of hope, but it's great. And yeah, just kind of delighted to be able to share my story and to kind of, I suppose, see the impact that it has.
And since you mentioned it, I was Googling it there. The MS Readathon, still going throughout November up until the 15th of December. The rather wonderful MS Readathon takes place in schools and homes across Ireland. msreadathon.ie and also ms-society.ie. This is the website for the MS Society of Ireland. Peter says, "We're all Facebooking to see what Killian's hair is like." it's a man bun. It's a kind of a man tail. I don't know the correct criteria for it. But like you said, Dr. Killian, it's about us, not you. It's about our reaction.
Yeah.
Listen, thanks a million for coming in.
Thank you.
And
thanks
good
for
luck.
Having me on.
I would say Hon Meads, but we can't say that for Monaghan. So we'll continue to enjoy the difficulties of the Royals.
We'll be hopefully meeting you in Division 2 this year.
don't mention that either. 51551 for your text. Thanks to Killian. Bye-bye.